Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy, powered by the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation. Higher ed in Oklahoma has long been kind of tumultuous for at least 20, 30 years. As much as we love our Sooner football and as much as we love our cowboy sports, we have a really hard time funding it at the state level. That's not a new problem. What I paid as an undergraduate for tuition I think my family would have been priced out of OU if I was going to OU this year as a freshman. But the problem is rather than trying to double down and add extra support and do more to use higher ed as the economic engine that it should be and that it can be if treated well, instead, you've seen this year our leaders, our newly elected superintendent of education, for instance, and also Governor Stitt, start kind of trying to take a cudgel to higher ed, broadly speaking. In some ways, it's a little bit more implied, but in other ways, it's a very direct attack and questioning of the worth and the return on investment for higher ed in general. So as an example, you saw Governor Stitt this year issue a challenge to up college enrollment in the state of Oklahoma to tens of thousands of people. Well, there's a lot of problems with that. Namely, our campuses can't house or they don't have the facilities to teach that many kids. Our college campuses are not like, for instance, UT Austin. We don't have the facilities for 40,000 students. And we also, we just don't have that many kids that can come to our schools from in-state. You also have this demographic cliff that's coming. And I can tell you that the admissions and recruitment folks at our colleges in Oklahoma are very well aware of this demographic cliff that's coming. 2028, I believe, is when it is. And we're going to see a huge decline in enrollment just from natural factors, not because anyone's turned off from higher ed, but just because there won't be students to come to higher ed. But also on top of that, you are seeing kind of the faucet that was Texas students coming to Oklahoma for higher for their college education slowly being turned off because they're being recruited to, say, Arkansas, who they can offer reciprocal tuition rates now as the Texas institutions. And so we're kind of getting priced out by the kids that are choosing to go to Arkansas instead of Oklahoma. So there's a whole bunch of kind of financial issues facing higher ed in Oklahoma, right? And then you put that on top of that, the fact that the state does not appropriate adequate amounts of dollars to higher education, we've got a problem with higher ed. But yet, for some reason, the problem that our leaders see, and by our leaders, I mean Secretary Walters and Governor Stitt, is somehow it's the diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives that are causing problems for our higher education, right? It's the same things that have been lobbied towards K through 12 education the past couple of years, namely critical race theory and DEI and indoctrination and pornography and yada, yada, yada. Suddenly now that's higher ed's problem. So we now have a Secretary of Education who actually has no statutory power over higher education in the state. K-12, yes, maybe a little bit, but not higher ed. Send out a letter to the Chancellor of the Regions for Higher Education in Oklahoma, Chancellor Garrett, demanding that she give him in basically a week a line item budget of all the DEI initiatives and programs in the state of Oklahoma at our higher ed institutions. And so the colleges all did that. And basically what they came back and said was, Chancellor Garrett said was, here is the list of all the programs. And it wasn't just classes. It wasn't just these booklets and these pamphlets and these indoctrination sessions, but it was things that did stuff like support first generation students and support veterans coming back to college. And she also pointed out the accreditation of most institutions now relied upon DEI, and Oklahoma doesn't determine their accreditation. Okay, so I'm going on and on about this, but the fact is higher ed is under attack now in ways that we haven't been before. Once they just tried to bleed higher ed dry by forcing tuition rates up, and now they're coming under like the very essence of what it means to be in higher education. You're supposed to enjoy the life of the mine and be exposed to new ideas, as well as get job training and career readiment and all these other things. And suddenly they're, you know, suddenly we're being, those of us who work in higher ed are being, we've become prone to the wiles of right-wing attacks. That's not necessarily new. When I was in grad school, you know, there was the whole thing where so supposedly liberal faculty members were put on some lists and stuff. This is not new. However, this is a real problem facing higher ed. And we see it coming in one direction where it's attacking, you know, Secretary Walters has attacked whether or not we should even send students to Oklahoma colleges. And Governor Stitt has come and said, I absolutely disagree with that. So they're not even on the same page. So to help us make sense of all of that and see, you know, what we can expect going forward and what those of us who live in college towns and support higher education, what can we do? What do we need to know about this renewed attack on higher education? We brought the one, the only, the newly elected Representative Jared Deck. He replaced, or he took over Representative Emily Virgin's seat in the State House of Representatives. He is my neighbor, it just so happens. and of course, he supplies the music that you hear in the background of this podcast. So Representative Deck, it's great to see you as Representative Deck here on ObserverCast. But tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Yes, thank you very much, Mary Ann. I'm happy to be here with you and Arnold on the ObserverCast. And also very grateful that the ObserverCast uses my song, True Believer, the background. I'm honored to be a part of that, to be a part of this podcast in such a way. I'm originally from Western Oklahoma. Born and raised in a small town called Thomas, about 1,200 people. I actually went to Southwestern Oklahoma State University and lived in Western Oklahoma for a vast majority of my life, and eventually found my way to Norman as my partner found a job on campus here with the university. And, you know, I was elected to the Career Tech School Board and, 2019, 2020, right in that era, and served on that for several years, and then was elected to the State House of Representatives in 2022, and serving in my first legislative session now. I am pleased to serve on the Higher Ed and Career Tech Committee, the standing committee that oversees those agencies, those organizations. And I think that, you know, you're right what you're talking about, Mary Ann. And to me, this has been a backlash since 1990, since the passage of House Bill 1017, when the citizens of Oklahoma decided to take responsibility for public education and pay for it. And what we've seen over time is the gradual defunding of these institutions, particularly in higher education. And, you know, I tell a story about my father. My father graduated from college in 1978 with $1,500 in student debt. He was able to go into his hometown bank. Again, his hometown was the same hometown as mine, community of about 1,200 people. And his hometown bank loaned him $150,000 to buy a grocery store business in that same town of 1,200 people, not exactly a burgeoning new market. And then, you know, within a few years was able to pay himself $15,000. That's 10 times his student debt. He could buy a car for about 10% of his annual salary, a used car. And then he bought a home for less than 2 years' salary for $25,000. And that economic model that we had in the 1960s, 70s, and early 80s, we have flipped it on its head ever since then. So now we are burdening working families and their kids with more debt than what they can make in a year, oftentimes. And definitely where their job only now pays maybe 20 or 15% of what the cost of purchasing a home is. And to me, that it's that economic model that we have flipped upside down that is part of the problem. And then just the general attitude toward education and learning. And that's something that we're battling right now at the state capitol.
You know, I mean, I'll just point out, like, when you're on OU's campus, what you learn is just how much, you know, things like the GI Bill impacted our state, you know, our public universities, right? Like, you just know across campus, there's urban lore around campus about how much things changed when all the soldiers came back after World War II, benefited from the GI Bill, you know, newly upwardly mobile, you know, families and all that sort of stuff. And then just to see that complete shift away from encouraging and pushing higher education as upward mobility, right? To see that rhetoric then become so intrinsic to the political discourse here in the state of Oklahoma, even though all three of us know, you know, Greg Treats, Speaker McCall, Governor Stitt, you know, all of them have no problem showing up at the games, right? That they're a presence at, you know, any sort of athletic event. But just to see the way that higher ed is, you know, either tacitly or explicitly defunded and delegitimized by our state leaders is really quite shocking.
Yes, I agree. And I think we should go so far as to say that, you know, particular statements made by statewide elected officials are really, I think, intended to hurt football recruiting. I mean, let's just be honest. You know, you can't have it both ways. You can't have the university football team and not have the university. You know, you cannot have, and, you know, we see this in my community here in Norman, where we have folks throughout the community who may not like the things or the attitudes of you know, our professor community, but you can't have the university and not have a professor community. You can't have things both ways. And that's the dichotomy that we're seeing here, or dichotomy may not be the right word, but it's that's the problem that we have here, is we have someone who is in charge of public education to a degree, basically saying they don't believe in public education. And I don't understand anyone who doesn't have the mentality of wanting to make things better than when they found them. And I realize that can be a relative term, but that's the way I look at any organization that I'm a part, any type of leadership position I've ever been in. You know, I want things to be a little bit better when I leave than when I started. And unfortunately, right now, we seem to have people in power who seek the opposite, who do not believe in the institutions that they lead, who talk poorly about their employees, their subordinates, and expect those people to work harder in spite of the fact of how they're being treated and spoken of in a public fashion. And, you know, for me as a state rep, you know, my job is to stand up, to speak out, and to try to hold these statewide elected officials accountable for their words and for their actions. And you're right. When it comes to athletic events, everyone loves to show up. But when it comes to celebrating academia, when it comes to celebrating student success, there is a conditionality that is placed upon that is not placed upon every single department on campus.
You know, Jared, what's odd to me is that, and we watched a decade plus of budget cuts to K-12 and to higher ed, the deepest in the nation, I believe, to both, certainly to K-12. And we saw a few scraps thrown last year to higher ed, you know, before you were sworn into office. At least they got a little something back, but of course, nowhere near replacing what had been lost over the decade. But, you know, if you look at it and you say, well, okay, you know, Kevin Stitt, on paper at least, is pretty wealthy and he can afford to send his kids to college and so forth. But I would think a lot of the folks that you serve in the state house with, and probably a lot of members of the committee, the Higher Ed and Career Tech Committee, are pretty rank and file average, you know, maybe upper middle class by a lot of Oklahoma standards, but still, they would feel the pinch of sending their kids to one of our universities here in Oklahoma. You would think that they would be acutely aware of what was necessary to help get their kids prepared for that experience, and then what that experience might entail from a cost standpoint. And yet, do you see any appreciation at all that we're sort of paddling in the wrong direction on this thing, and that there are consequences that the state's going to pay as a whole in the not too distant future in terms of our growth and prosperity and achieving what we have the potential to achieve?
That's a great question. You know, I don't know every member of the legislature yet. Unfortunately, I'm getting there. But no, I don't really see that. I see some complaints about the cost of housing. As we have more millennials be elected to office, I do hear a little bit more about the price of going to college. But as long as we have, you know, a majority of members in the legislature who are, who are over the age of 50, I mean, who did not experience the sharp increase, well, the sharp decrease in state funding to higher ed, and that increase in that percentage of tuition of total cost of education being put onto the back of the student and the student's family. But no, I don't hear enough. And that's the message that I've been trying to get across ever since I started running for this office and now at the Capitol, is that this economic model that we had for my father no longer exists. And pretending that if we just work harder, that if we just put in more hours, that everything can be fixed. That's not the case. You know, we are incentivizing new jobs in this state. And by incentivizing, I mean with tax dollars, jobs that, you know, pay decently, but $36,000 does not buy you a home in Norman. And, you know, that sounds like a decent salary job for 15, 20 years ago, but that is not the case today. My home, we bought our home, you know, for $82 a square foot, and that was just 5.5 years ago. And I realized we got a great deal on it, but right now I could probably sell the house for $180 a square foot. It's wild. And so I don't make, you know, 2.5 times what I made back then. So, you know, that's, again, it just goes back to the same thing. You can't have things both ways. You can't have rising home values and stagnant wages. You just can't do both. And you can't have rising tuition costs along with stagnant wages, because in the end, I mean, you know, to use a term we hear a lot, the return on investment for the student. I mean, we know the value of a higher education degree, but the issue is that we are built as a state, we are helping businesses build their individual businesses, but we don't seem to be working to build an economy that promotes upward mobility economically for the poor and working families.
Well, and I would just say too, I mean, you know, the human capital side of all of this, right? I mean, just the thought of, and we saw this, and we've talked about this before on this podcast, but, you know, when Stitt and, you know, Lieutenant Governor Pinnell tried to court Tesla, and he's a big dope, but, you know, Elon Musk was even like, I can't get my people to move to Oklahoma, right? I mean, in Texas, you know, Texas is a whole nut of itself, but the fact that, you know, people have to think about whether their highly skilled, highly educated, highly trained workforce would relocate to our state, when they hear the rhetoric of statewide elected officials like Ryan Walters, I mean, have you heard any conversations at the Capitol about the damage that is being done by such discourse?
Well, it's something I talk about nearly every day at the Capitol. Again, you can't have things both ways. You know, every meeting, every conference, every summit that the legislature attends by any type of special interest group or advocacy group out there, you know, 90% of what we hear is we have a workforce shortage. But we are not competitive as a state to recruit workforce from other states to our state. If you live in North Carolina, which, by the way, is considered the number one state in the nation to do business,
if you live in North Carolina and you find a job for a company that you like in Oklahoma, but your child is queer, you are not moving to Oklahoma, period. So there is this idea that we can have it both ways, that we can invest and we can in certain types of business, but not educate the workforce to work in that business. We believe that we can send these messages across the country about, you know, how we feel about people who may look, act, or believe differently than we do, and that somehow is going to draw people here. I mean, the governor made a comment recently. I'm paraphrasing to the degree of Oklahoma isn't for everyone. Well, you don't get to pick and choose who comes here. And that's what I feel like we're seeing at the Capitol, is we're seeing this idea that we are going to pick and choose. We need more workers here, but we're going to pick and choose who those workers are, what they look like, what they believe, how they behave, and who they love. And again, it just comes back to it. You can't have it both ways. And we, in order to be competitive for a workforce that is under 40, which I think is another part of the problem, a lot of the time it feels like people at the Capitol still believe that the workforce was born prior to 1965. And that is just not the case. We have got to be competitive for working families that are 40 and under.
So what do we see happening? What's in your crystal ball for the rest of session regarding higher education?
Well, on the House side, we did not hear a lot of bills in higher ed and career tech this year, which is probably a good thing. The Senate side, we're waiting, we'll wait to see what gets off the Senate floor, and then it'll make its way over to the House then around April. And, we'll start hearing probably more of the controversial bills, I think, are coming from the Senate this year. The House did a good job, I would say, of shutting a lot of that down this year. And so I think we need to be on the lookout for what the governor's made a few comments in his State of the State address. One was about having fewer DEI officers in public education. So that is obviously a target of right-wing attack. And then secondly, the governor also made a comment about tinkering with the career tech funding formula, or reimagining the career tech funding formula. Career tech is the one thing that Oklahoma has consistently been top 10 in. And so I don't understand why we would need to reimagine that or even tinker with that. Career tech programs, are really filling that gap where no one else is, where you can have, my brother-in-law, it's a nice anecdote, but my brother-in-law enrolled in a career tech program in Oklahoma and, completed his program 2 months early and received a job right out the gate 2 weeks after completion of the program at $75,000 a year. I mean, that is a phenomenal, tool for upward economic mobility. And, the idea that we're going to tinker with that, that concerns me whenever we have statewide elected officials who do not have the best interests of public education in their minds. And I think there's going to be more bills about don't say gay, banning drag queens, on top of the gender affirming care ban that we've already seen go through the House. And so really, we have to fight these, and we have to send the message that these bills are bad for business. They're bad for Oklahomans, and they're definitely going to harm our institutions in ways that they may not foresee. Eventually, this will hurt the football team. Eventually, this will hurt recruitment for universities, not only when it comes to who we're recruiting to work at our universities, but who we are recruiting to attend. eventually, if you say it enough times, eventually people will start to believe it, whether it's true or not. So we have to fight back against this narrative that higher education is problematic, and that public education at large is a problem. It is not the problem. You know, we have a state senator who talks consistently about books in school libraries. And my thing, and he goes on, tells an anecdote about a seventh grader checking out a book in a library that he deems inappropriate. And my comment, and I said this in front of him, is that if you have a seventh grader and you haven't already talked with your seventh grader about this topic, that responsibility is on you as a parent, not on the educator. And again, I've said this probably 18 times, you can't have it both ways. You can't ask people to teach, and then you can't ask teachers to stay out of certain topics and then ask teachers to enforce your values into your kids. And that's what we're seeing is, you know, I would just call it, you know, really irresponsible on the idea of some parents who now want educators to enforce the parents' values into the kids. That's not the teacher's job. That's not a professor's job. Their job is to teach perspective, to teach critical thinking, and to teach information so that students can be successful. And, you know, I think we're going to see more of these bad bills. I think in the House we'll be able to kill some of them, but expect to hear more bad news, unfortunately, before there's good news.
Well, so along those lines, I'm just thinking, I'm wondering, because there's now this kind of tit for tat going back and forth between Speaker McCall and Senate President Greg Treats about Speaker McCall's, shall we call it, school choice, school voucher gambit, right? And so Speaker McCall on the one hand says, they better take it or leave it. This is what they're going to get. And Treat says that's ridiculous. And so that's when I see the door opening for some really horrendous horse trading, right? I mean, I wonder what sort of bills they'll let pass in the House that they might not have otherwise in order to get Speaker McCall's bills on, heard in the Senate. And I mean, I just wonder, since it's such a big talking point right now from the Republicans, despite specifically Senator Treat's love of OU, I'm really worried that something like, a higher ed might become victim somehow to these House versus Senate legislative kerfuffles again. I don't know, Arnold, what do you think? I mean, to me, that just opens the door for horse trading.
Yeah, I agree completely, but I don't know. I think it's more than tit for tat. I mean, there's some real tension here, and you don't know how that's going to play out the rest of the way down the line, but it's very clear to me that the Speaker and the pro tem do not have high regard for each other, and they don't have high regard then also for the governor. So,
Right.
Who knows how this thing, it amazes me though, in thinking this through, Jared, that, you talked about going to these meetings and these interest groups are telling you that their number one problem is not having the workforce available here in Oklahoma. Yet there's a perception out there, I think, a general perception that is it's stereotypical, but it's fairly accurate too, that the business community sort of controls 23rd and Lincoln and the legislative process. You would think that the legislature would be jumping through hoops to deliver to these folks the kind of skilled workforce that they need. And instead, we're talking about throwing money at some of these projects, and there are people who are pushing back saying, well, there are myriad problems with that. One, we don't have the workers to fill those positions. We don't have any place to house them. We don't have schools that can absorb them in the area. We don't, it just is amazing to me that this doesn't seem to be a higher priority.
Well, I don't know. I feel like we have too many people in power who are constantly looking for the next job. And
yeah,
when you're looking to move up rather than to fulfill your duty, if those two things, you know, if one of them gets in the way of the other, it just creates problems. You know, I always say that, you know, everyone in politics, and that includes me, we all have some, you know, deep childhood trauma that makes us think that we belong in these positions, that we should be the ones who make these decisions for millions of people. And that the worst politicians, the worst people in politics are the people who are still running from those problems, from those traumatic, you know, events and those attitudes. And if you are seeking validation through being elected, if you are seeking fulfillment by moving up the governmental or the electoral ladder, then what happens is the results are what gets left in the dust. And that's what I think part of what we're seeing here is we have people who are not concerned about what we're hearing, what we need, as much as they are concerned about reaching the next position in their ambition. And, you know, that was something I've always said, you know, it's the best thing to be is the person who in the room who has nothing to lose, because then you can do what you came to do. And anyway, that's part of the issue. As far as the horse trading, I mean, I definitely see that potential, to agree with Marianne's point, in this back and forth between the House and the Senate. Particularly the Speaker of the House, you know, this is his education policy. I mean, these two bills, both they have his name on them. I mean, they are authored by, mm-hmm. he's the principal author on House Bill 2775, and then also on the tax credit one as well. And, you know, so these are signature items for him. And I thought it was interesting that he made the ultimatum of sorts, if you will, to the pro tem of the Senate. And I don't know if that was because the Senate had said that they wouldn't hear it, or if that was in order to begin the horse trading process. But yeah, I think it is going to be scary with what could get across from the Senate to the House based, you know, specifically on this idea that if the Speaker wants these two bills to get through, what is he willing to trade in order to get two bills through? And it's also, it's $800 million a year. So we should all be mindful that these two bills have a massive, massive price tag.
That's for certain. Well, our time is running out with you. I know that. Anything else that you think we should know before? So we're kind of at a lull in the legislative session. Spring break's kind of a little respite, and then you jump right back in at the week after. Anything you think we should know going into the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I would say keep an eye out for what hits the House floor. You know, the Senate really got to work very quickly at the beginning of session.
Yeah, they did 2-a-days. It was impressive.
Yes, they did. The House, we took our time, a little bit more of our own time this year, but we are moving a lot of legislation on the floor right now. I don't know exactly how many bills we heard yesterday, but it was a whole lot. And so, you know, really it's watching to make sure things don't slip through without thoroughly being looked at. There are several bills where the title is off and they could be changed drastically, in the next few weeks and definitely in the next few months. And so, you know, I've worked on a piece of legislation that might look good right now, but once it goes through the sausage grinder in the Senate and comes back, it may look completely different. And so, you know, I'm even hesitant to be celebratory about any kind of accomplishment at this point until I know something's going to achieve tangible change in the long run. And so that's kind of, for me, that's the thing to look out for, is the devil's in the details. And, you know, watch for things that are too big of a deal not to thoroughly question and debate.
Well, Representative Deck, thank you so much for your time today. It was a pleasure. Safe travels on your gig, doing your other job up there, playing some music for folks. But thanks again, and I hope we can have you back.
Well, I would love to come back, and yes, I'm happy to be doing a little weekender up in Indiana and Michigan. Flew out Thursday afternoon after session ended, and we'll fly back Sunday just in time for Monday morning session. But always happy to be with you, Marianne, and with Arnold and the Observer, and look forward to visiting with you all again in the future.
All right. Safe travels, friend.
Thanks, Jared.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Deck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just a resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Deck. We're so proud of you. But you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com.